This Father's Day, when you ship UPS Air at the UPS store, your items arrive on time or your money back, guaranteed at no extra cost. It's like the father of all shipping services. It shows up to the airport way too early, just to play it safe. It's overprotective about all the things that truly matter, and it's always prompt, especially to be with family. Make it your first choice to celebrate your dad. Ship UPS Air with our money-back guarantee, exclusively at the UPS Store U.S. retail locations. Visit theupsstore.com/airshipping for full details. Terms and conditions apply.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Round number two, Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keyser here with you on this snowy Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's staying safe out there. Nick Keyser live from our 102.5 The Game studios has made it back in there safely this morning. Hope everybody stays safe out there today. We do what we do every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock and welcome in our good friend Caroline Fenton to the program. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
I am freezing, but I hope that everyone is staying warm, staying safe. Shout out to Nick Keyser for making the trek and braving the elements this morning.
Did you do any sledding and or snowball fighting yesterday?
Absolutely not. I do not do the snow. I know that makes me sound like a total curmudgeon. I was born and raised in St. Louis. It snows a lot there. I spent 2 years in Connecticut. Also snows a significant amount there. I don't like it. I think it looks pretty when I'm in the warmth of my own house. I don't like to be cold. But my boyfriend did partake in a lot of sledding by himself.
I saw that.
It was a lack of sledding, really. He just deconstructed an Amazon box and thought that was really going to give him enough traction, but it did not. So
he gets an A plus.
He had to sled by himself, but I will not partake.
Joe, I feel like you're the same. You want no part of the snow.
Yeah, Keyser loves this crap. Keyser's just like a pig in slop, a Keyser in snow.
Yeah, I do. I don't have a problem with any of this.
You love it, man.
There's something you just wire different. Maybe you have a screw loose or something.
I do. I've got skates in my trunk, man. I'm ready to roll.
Oh boy!
You gonna go hit the frozen pond after the show?
No, probably not. I don't think that's.
Do you guys see y'all see the video of the dude like in Memphis skiing down Beale Street yesterday?
It was
pretty funny.
Yes,
it's pretty good stuff.
I did see that. I mean, I have to take the tip of my cap to the people in Buffalo. Yes. Who were sitting in literal mounds of snow. If there's any fan bases that would go through that, it is the Bills and the Steelers.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. So, Caroline, we'll get into the Titans stuff here in just a few minutes. I do want to get your thoughts on, number one, since the last time we talked, Nick Saban retiring from Alabama. Number two, his replacement being Kalen DeBoer of Washington. What do you make of the way that this has all gone down, and what did you make of that hire from Alabama?
Well, first of all, Nick Saban retiring, it was a huge shock to me. And Chris Lowe had it first, and I saw his tweet, and I'm clicking on his profile, making sure that this is the real Chris Lowe. Like, is my freak out warranted? But happy for Nick Saban. I mean, I think that we are going to look back on the day that Nick Saban retired and look at that as a major seismic shift in college football. And I think that, more than anything, is indicative of the impact that he's had on this game. I think Kalen DeBoer is a good hire. And looking at some of the coaches that Alabama was talking to, you know, Dan Lanning being one of them, I think Dan Lanning is a great coach. Has Dan Lanning done enough to earn the job at Alabama? I mean, Orkin's really, you know, his only big time job, and he's only been there for a few years. Lane Kiffin, major, major red flag. He feels like, to me, Lane Kiffin is not only a carbon copy of Nick Saban, but also the antithesis of Nick Saban, that I think that Alabama boosters would probably be rolling their eyes into the back of their heads, bringing in a guy who lives on Twitter. So there just were question marks, I think, about a lot of the candidates that Alabama was looking at, Sark included. Kalen DeBoer, to me, feels like not the sexy hire, like a Dan Lanning or a Mike Norvell would have, you know, won the press conference probably. Kalen DeBoer isn't the sexy hire, even though he just finished coaching in a national championship game. But he is a guy that doesn't really have a lot of red flags to me. He doesn't have the big personality that maybe Elaine Kiffin might have, but all he does is win. You know, he lost three games in his stint at Sioux Falls. And look, I get it. It's Sioux Falls, but you got to start somewhere. His first year at Fresno State, they went 3-3. It was the weird COVID season. They only played six games. And the next year, they come back and go 9-3. At Washington, he's lost three games in 2 years. And one of those games was the national championship game. I mean, Washington had the 108th ranked offense the year before he got there. The next year, his first year at Washington, the 7th ranked offense. So all the guy does is win. I do find it very interesting that there was one head coach that never spent any time in the South, and all the conversation was not a culture fit. Not necessarily the conversation here with Kalen DeBoer. All of a sudden, nobody's worried about his ability to recruit the South. But that
have
really
you heard him say the word family yet? That's really the determining factor for me.
I did hear that the big news out of his press conference is that he did not say y'all. He said you all. Which I think is the perfect indication of what kind of coach he's going to be. But no, in all seriousness, I would say that the only question mark that I would have is, can he do it in the SEC? Can he recruit in the South? But I think bringing in Kane Womack as his defensive coordinator, the head coach at South Alabama, is kind of him maybe deferring the Alabama recruiting side of things to his new defensive coordinator.
So what do you think about the Tennessee Titans these days, Caroline? A lot has happened since we talked last week.
Look, I am not against the firing of Mike Vrabel. The most important thing in the National Football League is winning football games. We haven't doing a whole lot of that around here. I think Mike Vrabel is a good coach, but I also think that maybe things have run its course. So I'm not anti the firing of Mike Vrabel, but what I would like to know is maybe what the head coach and the general manager are looking for in their next head coach. And maybe like to know, you know, if you're going to say that Mike Vrabel didn't align with your vision, I'd maybe like to know what that vision exactly is. If one of the problems or one of the issues that we've been talking about really ever since Rand Carthon was brought in was who has final say, who's calling the shots here, who's running the show. I would like to know maybe what your philosophy is moving forward in terms of leadership that you say, and I'm not willing to say who has final say, but all of the coaches that you have requested to interview, all of the coaches that you've interviewed so far, haven't really done enough to earn final say, in my opinion. If you bring in Bill Belichick, yeah, that's a different story. But has Brian Callahan done enough in the NFL to warrant final say with the Tennessee Titans? I don't think so. So I think that I'm just a little bit confused about what they want to be, where they want to go next, just because they're not telling us. But I look at, you know, interviewing Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson, Brian Callahan. Those are all coaches I would love to see in Tennessee. Dan Quinn, not so much. I'm good on Dan Quinn.
So do you subscribe to the theory that that Jared does? And look, I understand it, that it has to be an offensive coach, or would you be on board with a defensive coach or a guy like an Antonio Pierce and trust them to go hire their offensive coordinator? How do you view the style of the coach that the Titans are looking for? Does it have to be an offensive guy for you?
Doesn't have to be. Like, I am not married to an offensive guy. I would prefer an offensive guy, because when I look at the Titans coaching search, I think one of the top priorities has to be keeping Will Levis in mind. He's your young quarterback. He is your most valuable asset. If you bring in a defensive head coach, ideally that defensive head coach would bring in an offensive coordinator to run the offense. Well, if your offensive coordinator absolutely crushes it and Will Levis turns into an elite quarterback at the top of the league, well, that offensive coordinator is probably going to get a head coaching job somewhere. So now you're left to find a new OC. Maybe that OC brings a different offensive philosophy. Now Will Levis learns yet another offense. I think consistency offensively is what I would want for Will Levis. And it's just the way that the league is going. Look at some of the best coaches in the NFL. Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid, they're all offensive guys. And that's a convenient argument. You know, John Harbaugh is not an offensive guy necessarily, but it just feels like some of the coaches that are having the most success in the NFL, they are offensive guys. So I'm not married to an offensive guy. I don't need an offensive guy. But if they bring in a defensive head coach, you're going to have to sell me on that a little bit harder than you would have to a Bobby Slowick, a Ben Johnson, so on and so forth.
All right. So what's your top three?
Bobby Slowick, Ben Johnson, Brian Callahan.
That was fast.
In no particular order.
That was quick. I like that.
Thank you.
The Slowick, I mean, look, the Slowick and Johnson, especially this weekend, a lot of Titans fans, I think, sit there and watch those wild card games and are like, yes, give me some of that. That'd be awesome.
And sitting there and watching that absolutely wretched, horrendous Cowboys defense against your Packers, Robbie. Like and D-May said, you know, you can't change your mind just based off of one game. I know, but it was so bad that I already don't really want a defensive head coach. I'm good on Dan Quinn, but I did see, and his name is escaping me, the Titans requested to interview the Panthers offensive coordinator.
Yes, Thomas Brown.
Yeah. Brown. Yes. Thank you. I am not going to act like a Thomas Brown genius. Panthers offense didn't look so hot this past year, but also in that same breath, the Titans offense didn't look very good this past year. And I think Tim Kelly's a pretty good offensive coordinator. So I mean, could be more personnel than it is scheme.
Yeah. I mean, their top weapon was Adam Thielen. The Tennessee Titans, when they
played
hate
Adam Thielen.
I don't hate Adam Thielen.
What's your beef with Adam Thielen?
No, but
you don't like 35-year-old receivers whose best days are behind them?
See, no, he's been a nice player. But, like, when the Titans were talking after that big win over the Panthers about how all week we couldn't let Thielen beat us, I was like, oh, my God, is that the worst offense in the history of the NFL then? So I'm going to give Thomas Brown and Bryce Young a pass for this year, but I guess we'll find out.
Joe is such a Bryce Young Bobo.
Bryce Young Bobo, Adam Thielen hater. It's unbelievable.
Hey, man, I'm just saying, I'm not giving up on Bryce. I'm not giving up on Bryce, but you know, it's a little disappointing, but you used to be with me, Caroline.
Oh, I'm totally with you. I love Bryce Young.
You're still with me?
Oh, absolutely.
We're still on team Bryce. Okay, good.
I think
good.
It is football malpractice what they have done to that quarterback.
By the way,
it really is.
Adam Thielen, 103 catches, 1,000 yards, 4 touchdowns this year. So just put some respect on his name.
So Caroline, 9 yards a catch?
Comeback player of the year?
9.8 yards per catch.
Yeah, baby.
Caroline, last thing for you. Where do you think Mike Vrabel ends up throughout all this? Because I will say, like, the idea of him becoming the next Dallas Cowboys head coach is very funny to me and very intriguing.
I think it's hilarious. And I think that he would be miserable if he had to deal with Jerry Jones every single day. Like, if he couldn't get along with Amy Adams Strunk, if we're talking about a quote-unquote meddling owner in Tennessee, you're going to go to Dallas and expect things to be any better? I think that is absolutely hilarious. I also think it is absolutely hilarious. Before Kalen DeBoer was hired at Alabama, somebody brought up the idea of Mike Vrabel to Alabama.
Yes.
And I thought that is actually hilarious. Also, another job that I think Mike Vrabel would hate. I think that Mike Vrabel to Dallas is very intriguing. Jerry Jones hiring Bill Belichick feels like a very Jerry Jones move. I don't think that Jerry Jones would relinquish as much control and power as Bill Belichick would want him to. So I'll say Mike Vrabel to Dallas.
Oh, yes. I'm rooting for it.
I'm here for
Looks
it.
Looks good in a cowboy hat.
He does, and he's got a couple pairs of boots.
Yeah, it'd be good. Right. Be ready to go.
Yeah.
Caroline, stay warm, stay safe. We'll be listening coming up at 11 o'clock. Appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning.
All right, appreciate y'all. Have a good one.
Caroline Fenton with us, as she is every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock, talking all things football. Speaking of the Titans, there's a question that I have that we're going to get to coming up next. Is it possible that the Titans could be casting too wide of a net in their coaching search? We'll get into that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Disturbed with special guest Falling in Reverse at Bridgestone Arena on Saturday, February 17th. Be caller number 3-615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. Caller 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Disturbed with special guest Falling in Reverse at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Saturday, February 17th, 615-737-1025. Thanks to Caroline Fenton for being with us in the last segment. She brought up the Thomas Brown requesting to be interviewed by the Titans offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. And I saw Terry McCormick throwing this out there on Twitter yesterday, which is an interesting question. Like, is it possible that the Titans are casting maybe too wide of a search when it comes to their next head coaching search? it does feel like they are connected to pretty much everybody that's not named Bill Belichick or Pete Carroll or Jim Harbaugh in this coaching search. It feels like everybody else, the Titans are at least in contact with. What do you make of that idea that maybe the Titans are casting too wide of a net in their coaching search?
It's an interesting question. And again, I'd love to have it all organized. I mean, it probably wouldn't be that hard to figure it out or to do it, but to see all the coaches with openings, how many they interview, who all they interview, and, you know, kind of cross-reference all that. Seems like Titans have the biggest pool. But my question is, what's wrong with that? Like, what are they doing? You know, like, what are they right. doing otherwise? Are you getting ready for the draft? Of course. You know, and you're grinding through all the film and the analytics and all the things, getting ready for a huge offseason in terms of, player choices, which, of course, you're also trying to figure out who you're bringing in, who's going to have a significant say in all these things, whatever, you know, however we think it's going to go down. Again, I think it's pretty clear from the firing of Mike Vrabel that Amy Adams Strong hates the idea of a coach having full control. So we know that's not going to be the case, right? But we also know it's still going to be a coach with a lot of say, as it should be. But like, what else you got going on, man? You do some interview everybody. Why the hell not? Interview 20 people and, you know, compare and contrast and get as much a feel as you can possibly get for as many candidates as possible, and then you cut it down. I mean, I have no problem with it. I guess at some point, you know, obviously you want to whittle it down and you want to really focus in on a real core group that you're interested in. But I don't see anything wrong with some, you know, initial interviews with a bunch of people.
I don't either. I mean, I do think you can overcomplicate things sometimes when you're talking to so many people rather than just focusing in on who you actually want to go hire. But on the surface, no, I don't have a problem with the Titans being connected to as many people as they are. I mean, I do find it interesting that they're not even like considering interviewing Bill Belichick or Jim Harbaugh. Like, look,
there you go. That tells you what she thinks.
You know, it does tell you what she thinks, but like, it's also like, what if, and maybe they don't feel this way, but what if you think Jim Harbaugh is like the best coach available on the market? Aren't you doing yourself a little bit of a disservice by not interviewing? Like, I understand that the dynamic of bringing in a Belichick or bringing in a Harbaugh is different from going out and hiring Ben Johnson or Bobby Slowick, right? Like, those guys have been around, especially Belichick, right? He's been around. He's won 6 Super Bowls. He's going to probably ask for things that those guys are not qualified to ask for. Even Harbaugh, like, Harbaugh is at Michigan. To leave to come take a job in the NFL probably is going to want some level of control. So I get it. Like, the Titans don't want to do that. It just is interesting to me that they are connected to pretty much everybody else in this coaching search right now other than those two.
No, and that's the thing. You don't know. Maybe we've talked about this. Maybe Belichick's like, you know what? As it turns out, the way we did things, I'm a coach. Just want to be a coach. And Harbaugh, who knows exactly how he views it. Obviously, he had issues with Balky going back with San Fran, which is why he left the NFL. But I do wonder, sometimes maybe there's back-channel conversations where it's just like, I do feel like Harbaugh is a really, he's like, it's either like this job or, yeah, I'm good. You know, he's gonna get a huge raise at Michigan, all that stuff. Belichick, maybe, you know, so maybe that's part of the answer, but it does feel like right from the jump, it was like, nope, no thank you to those guys.
Right.
You know, they're going to try to be too dominant in the building. We can't have that. And it's almost like in a different way. And again, I was for, you know, re-signing Ryan Tannehill, but it's like, you know, Tom Brady, you had a chance to go after Tom Brady, didn't do it. Now you have a chance to go after Bill Belichick, not going to do it.
And again, like, I don't really on the surface have a huge problem with that. Like, if I had my choice, it probably would not be Bill Belichick, who I'd go out and hire for the Titans. And I think most Titans fans probably agree with that. It just is interesting, the philosophy and approach that way. And look, we'll see. I mean, I wonder, like, if you gave Amy Adams Strunk and Rand Carthon like some truth serum, who are the three or four people that they're really targeting? Because when you go into this, you have to have like a certain level of idea of who you're looking for and who you're targeting. And that doesn't mean that you can't interview somebody and be absolutely blown away by it and change the way that you think. But I would assume that like there was some level of plan that they had heading into this process. And I would love to know if that's been changed, if that's been influenced. Like, did Antonio Pierce come in and just knock their socks off with an interview? Did that change the way they view things? So that, from that standpoint, I don't have a problem with them interviewing as many people as possible, because maybe somebody does come in there that you weren't expecting to really consider that comes in there and just blows you away with an interview.
Exactly. Yeah. Pierce is a good example. And, you know, who knows if he's going to be available, probably less likely than not, from what it sounds like. But yeah, I think that's exactly it. It's like everybody immediately goes to the Slowiks and the Johnsons and all that stuff. But I mean, like, maybe Thomas Brown is just like, holy crap, this guy is so impressive. Look, if we're talking about OCs, I think Dave Canales with the Bucks, got to look at that guy and say, man, look at what, I mean, Baker Mayfield had like better numbers than Brady this year in Brady's great year. And that's Baker Mayfield, you know, and I mean, that offense is, you know, it's good. They have good receivers like they had with Brady, but I feel like that guy, you throw him on the list too. Interview everybody. I mean, but you're probably right. I'm sure that there's more of a focused group that they expect to be finalists or whatever, however you're going to organize it. But you never know. You never know if someone comes in and all of a sudden you're like, oh, I didn't look at it that way. You got to really take this guy seriously now.
Coming up next, we'll get into the Predators. How do we view the UC Saros situation, both with the way that he's playing right now and how that could influence a long-term contract with UC Saros as well? We'll get back into that discussion. Take your thoughts, 615-737-1025, our phone number. That's coming up next. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan this Thursday night for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Commodores will be at home taking on Auburn. Tip-off at 6:30, pregame at 6:15. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 949thefan.com. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Preds lose last night 4-1 to the Vegas Golden Knights. UC Saros in net again. And Joe, we talked a little bit about him yesterday. It's been an interesting season for him to this point. His numbers are currently a 3.02 goals against average, so just above three, and a 900 save percentage, which is not very good. His career numbers are 2.62 goals against and a 917 save percentage. So he's well below his career numbers so far this season. He's had some stretches this year where he's looked great. He's had some stretches where he's looked bad, and that's kind of how you've ended up at the save percentage and the numbers that he's at right now. It's interesting to watch this happen. I talked yesterday about the new system, and I do think that that's affected, especially in the early part of the year, Saros and the way that he's played a little bit. But he is eligible to sign a contract extension on July 1st. So he's got one more year after this one remaining on his current contract. He is eligible for a contract extension on July 1st of this summer. So you have a chance, if you're the Predators and you want to do it, to go ahead and lock him up long term. There's also the idea that some Predators fans are still throwing out there of trying to trade UC Saros, bringing up Yaroslav Askarov, and Askarov being the goalie that you go with in the future. Joe, if you're Barry Trotz, and I think you would agree with me on this, the signs, at least that I read, pointing into this season, kind of lended itself to the idea that the Predators were going to try to sign Saros to an extension. That's kind of the vibe that I got. That's kind of the just kind of the way the wind was blowing of it. Felt like the Predators, when the time came, wanted to extend UC Saros and sign him to a long-term deal. I'm not saying that that's changed. I'm not saying it should change, but I do wonder, based on the way that this season has gone to this point, how are you viewing the way that Saros has played if you're Barry Trotz? And does that have any impact at all in your mind, Joe, of his long-term future here with the franchise?
It's really interesting. Like, there's so much to it, including how do we, you know, how does Barry Trotz evaluate everything right now for this season? Because obviously the Preds are always going to say, we're not good enough in front of them and all that stuff, just like everybody says about every goalie. But the underlying numbers suggest that it's not that simple. It's not just like new system and they hang him out to dry a little bit more. I mean, there's some slippage in the numbers. There is, of course, like what if there's, so there's that question. There's the question of what do you really think Yaroslav Askarov is going to be? Do you think he's going to be great? Because obviously, if you can have some years with him at price control and you and he's a legit starting goalie in this league, then that really gives you flexibility to build up your roster. So I like you said, I mean, I think in the summer, Barry Trotz was also openly open about possibly moving Soros, which made sense to me. We talked about it a lot, right? It's just like the timing works out that you don't have to get to that next contract where you might regret the number he's getting a little bit later in the deal, right? And then you can just move to the next guy. But obviously, he didn't like what he didn't like what he saw. So I'm going to go to, okay, quote, I'm going to go to this Trotz, and, you know, it wasn't like, it was just me he was saying this stuff to, but this is a quote I got from Trotz in October, okay? Quote, Soros wants to be here. If he wants to be here, I want him to be here. The number has to be right. His agents are tough negotiators. They were Shea Weber's agents, but they work for the player. The player can say where he wants to be. I think UC is special. And actually, when we go to Calgary, and this is in October, I told his agent, we want to sit down with you. Let's talk and see what you're thinking. Hellebuck signing sort of sets the bar. And, of course, he just signed, at 30, a seven-year, $59.5 million extension, yep. AAV of 8.5. The guy who has won a Vezina, unlike Soros, but very similar career numbers and all that stuff. So where is that now? I mean, I'm assuming they've talked a few times, right? Nothing's happened.
Well, and keep in mind, like, nothing can happen.
Nothing can happen during the season. Yeah, but, nothing can happen during the season. Right. But, yeah, it's like, it's interesting. Like, you just, I mean, I guess it's not like you're expecting Barry Trotz to give you constant, play-by-play of those discussions. But, like, is his thinking any different now that we're in January? And it has been a tough season for Soros.
Well, I think it's that, but it's also, like, I think part of this conversation has always been, you know, in addition to Soros, how does Askarov look?
Yeah.
And after a slow start for him this year, he looks great. His numbers are outrageous. He's got a 2.01 goals against average in Milwaukee and a .926 save percentage. I mean, he's been great for the Admirals. So, and look, he came up here and had, you know, a nice cup of coffee with the Predators, came in relief one game, and then got the big win in Washington and shut down Ovechkin and Kuznetsov in the shootout. But the answer to that question so far this year is Askarov looks outstanding. So how does that factor into your decision-making moving forward? Now, you know, obviously the AHL and the NHL are two completely different things, but he is 21 years old, and I think he's tracking to be a really good player. So when you factor in the whole picture of what Soros has looked like through half a season at the age of 28 and what Askarov has looked like in Milwaukee so far this year, does that influence your thinking at all? Now, look, I know a lot of Predators fans, with the way that things have gone lately with Soros, are worried about it. I'm still not worried about him long-term. Like, I think he's going to be fine. There's too much of a body of work that shows me that Soros is an elite goalie for me to just totally panic about what we've seen so far. There's no question. There has been some slippage and some of the high danger save percentage numbers that we're used to seeing be just outstanding from Soros have been not very good so far this year. So it's not been a good start to the season for him. Having said that, I'm not to the point with Soros where I'm worried that he's just lost it and he's not going to rebound from this moving forward.
Right. But it's not about, he's still good. I mean, to me, you don't do this next deal unless you're like, he is going to be great for the next few years. And also, I think you got to have, I, I think we've both agreed on this and talked about it before, but it just doesn't make sense to have both those guys. I think you got to pick one. I understand. Hey, it'd be a heck of a goalie like next year, you know, Saros and Ascara, but I think you have to pick a path. And so to me, the Saros path of that kind of a contract from here has got to be absolute conviction. One, that he's going to be great.
Yeah.
Like same numbers. He's got to be in the 920s and he's got to be all you got to believe that. And also, I think you have to have some serious doubts about Askarov. Because if Askarov is going to be what all of his talent and potential suggests, then I think that's the path I would go.
Well, I said it last summer, like when we were discussing this. I have real hesitation paying a goalie that much. And it's not like you can't win when you do that. Like, obviously, you know, Vasilevsky's been paid a lot of money and he has been worth it. You know, look, Hellebuck's a good example. I think he's a great goalie. They paid him a lot of money. That team looks awesome this year and he's a big part of it. So it's not like if you're the Predators and you hand out a big contract to UC Saros that you can't win. I do think the Predators, and this is not just a Saros discussion, I think they're in a spot right now where they need to be really selective about who they give money to and for how long they do it. And you could throw Tommy Novak into that discussion. There's a lot of guys you can throw into that discussion long-term of you have to me, you've just gotten yourself out of a place as a franchise where, you know, David Poile got the Ryan Ellis contract out from underneath him. They've moved on from Johansson. They moved on from Duchesne. I mean, you were in a spot there. I mean, Turris was there for a while. You were in a spot there for a while where your future was locked up and you had spent all your money and you just kind of dug your way out of that. I think you need to be selective about how you spend that money as you move forward here if you're Barry Trotz. And that doesn't mean necessarily that it can't be UC Saros, but I said last summer, like to me, if it's close and you think Askarov is going to be great, it's kind of like the quarterback discussion, right? Like if you think a quarterback is going to be great in the draft and you're in a spot to draft the quarterback, well, then you draft the quarterback and you restart the clock, right? Like the goalie situation can be viewed the same way. It may not be, but it can be viewed the same way.
Right. The difference being, you know, what's the return on a trade? It's obviously not as good as I thought it might be for Saros, but like
this year's not helping that either, by the way.
Exactly. A texter saying like run, you know, it's not fair to him, to Saros. He was the reason this team was better during Hines years, and one rough year shouldn't sour our opinion on him. And I don't disagree with that, but that's just not what it's about. I mean, it's just, are you going to pay him that kind of money? You know, that's the whole thing. And like, you know, Ethan from Lawrenceburg, you know, 1A, 1B with those two. I think if Askarov is that good, I just think that you're wasting money. And like, when you need that money in this league with the cap the way it is to you know, help your roster, like to pay Saros and then just have Askarov as if Askarov is that good to just have him as your back, it's not the same as Saros. You know, Saros came up with Pekka-Rinne. People didn't know he was going to be as good as he was, right? And it kind of developed over a few years of him being a really good backup. You just didn't know. And this is totally different when you drafted Askarov and all the chatter around him. It's just a different situation.
Well, and the main difference on that was like Pekka was in his mid-30s and Saros was just coming up. Saros is 28 right now. So,
right,
I mean,
right.
If you believe that Saros is going to be a great goalie for the next 5, 6, 7 years, well, then you make that decision and you pay him. But at some point, Askarov is going to be ready to play. And the question you got to determine is Askarov going to be ready to play for you? Or is he going to be ready to play for somebody else and you can flip him? Because to me, I'm with you. Like the idea of keeping both of them for an extended period of time, I'm not saying you can't have like maybe a 1 year stretch where you keep both of them. But the idea of keeping both of them for an extended period of time feels like a little bit of asset mismanagement to me.
No question. I mean, just look at the holes and what else you could do, you know, with your forwards. I mean, I think you have to, again, you got to pick a path. So Saros is, I mean, I wild speculation, but like, is this year, you know, reflective at all of Saros kind of understanding the pressure and all that and like sort of like how things are coming to a head? I mean, I have no idea. I just know that he hasn't played as well. I mean, like, there's no spin on his play. It's not as good this year.
No question about it. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. We'll do that next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Give it up to everybody in this room. First 7th seed in the history of the NFL to win a playoff game.
But wait, there's more.
There's a hell of a lot more. First of all, starting out with defense. Give it up for our kickoff team. Give it up for Jay Reed and Musgrave recovering those onside. Yeah. How about Daniel Whelan, 3 punts inside the 10? How about our defense? Give it up for our defense. This guy finished with the highest QB rating in Packer history at 150.
It is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Joe, I'm reminded that Matt LaFleur should just coach and not talk every time I hear him talk. But that's okay. I enjoyed it.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you just set up my rant perfectly with that little shot that you took at Matt LaFleur. You know, he's no Dan Campbell with the post-game speeches. I will admit that. But I want to remind everyone, especially you, the Green Bay Packers just went into Dallas, beat the Dallas Cowboys 48-32 in a game that was 48-16 before LaFleur pulled the starters. And then he put him back in, took blame after the game for doing it too early. And, of course, you on Twitter posted, "Hey, LaFleur, maybe put the freaking starters back in," which was one of, I'd say, roughly 10,000 insults of Matt LaFleur that you have posted publicly since I've known you. Now you did have a funny during the middle of this absolute butt whipping for a team that was a huge underdog. You did post, quote, "Like I've always said, I love Matt LaFleur," and that's funny. But seriously, you called that dude an idiot like 10,000 times.
I did,
and you're not alone. But I want to know if there's any chance that anyone wants to put some actual respect on the name of Matt LaFleur. I mean, the dude's 56-27. Yes, he's 3-3 in the playoffs. There's some bitter disappointments in there, but we're just now seeing what a team can do with a QB he's involved in choosing, molds his offense around. And yes, he had Aaron Rodgers previously, which is what everybody did to dismiss his good records early. Also means he was dealing with the single biggest distraction of a player in this league. A dude who caused dissent in that organization, which I think stemmed from the Love pick. A dude who's trying to get ESPN sued right now, who at any point when Matt LaFleur dealt with him might have been high AF, alienating family members, cradling himself in a dark room, or re-upping his QAnon VIP subscription so he can spout dumbass conspiracy theories into the world. That's who Matt LaFleur had to deal with. Yes, maybe the most talented quarterback of all time, but a lot of stuff that comes with it. And now look at what Jordan Love has become. Does Matt LaFleur get any credit for that? Does Matt LaFleur get credit for what they are now as, I think, one of the most exciting young teams in the NFL? I put it to you, Robbie Stanley.
He's done a very good job in the second half of the season. I will say that it does feel like the chemistry, and what I mean by that is like the play calling rhythm that he's in right now with Jordan Love. It feels like they figured something out about halfway through the season, right around the time they played against Pittsburgh, and they've not looked back since then. So look, he's done a lot of things that I have disagreed with. He's done a lot of things that I think have been pretty stupid, and I do think that he has cost them at least one, maybe two playoff games when they did have Rodgers and a chance to win a Super Bowl, which has been difficult to overcome. Having said that, I mean, the numbers are what they are, right? They have the fourth youngest team in the history of the National Football League to make a playoff game. I believe they have the youngest team since the merger to win a playoff game. They have a group of skill positions at wide receiver and at tight end that among the pass catchers, none of them are above a second-year player. And he's figured out that actually handing the ball to Aaron Jones when he's healthy and available is a good thing. So I will say, even as somebody who has been a staunch Matt LaFleur hater, which I admit to being, he's done a pretty darn good job of as of late. Does that count?
Yeah, that was underwhelming. That was underwhelming. I guess we'll have to take it. So I remember you know, the Packers giving up the freaking TD with 2 seconds left in the half against Brady at home.
Yep.
In the game. So when you say he cost them, you're talking about his play calling or just like other in-game coaching?
Play calling
stuff?
Decisions. He went with a field goal in the Tampa game that he had no business going for, that they should have tried to go for the touchdown. There's that one. And then the real one to me that killed me on him was the 49er game where they lost 13-10 to Jimmy Garoppolo. The play calling in that game was atrocious. Just to totally abandon the run. They tried to force feed Devontae Adams all game long when San Francisco wasn't giving it up. It was not good. It was a terrible play calling performance from him. And look, you know, I did not think last year, in the last year of Rodgers, that they handled things particularly well with the play calling either. And this is part of, like, this is to take this to the Titans. What do we talk about all the time, Joe, of the most glaring position in professional sports that is ripe for criticism? It's the offensive coordinator, right?
Yes.
Well, when your head coach is the offensive coordinator, I think he's more ripe for criticism than normal head coaches would be because you see what he's doing and you see the play calls. So I think that's been part of my disdain for LaFleur, and that if the Titans go that route and they hire an offensive guy, I think you'll see more criticism for him because of that if things don't go well.
But if they go as well as they've gone for Matt LaFleur, then you should see more praise, right? Am I right?
They've gone a lot better lately. Look, I will say, and you can put all the like the blame on Dan Quinn if you want to, which I'm sure he deserves some blame. That was as much of a pantsing from a scheme perspective as I've seen in a while, what the Packers did to the Cowboys in that game. I mean, at one point late in the third quarter, the Packers were averaging 9.5 yards per play. Think about that. 9.5 yards per play in a playoff game.
On the road against one of the most talented defenses in the NFL. That's the thing. It's not like, you know, I mean, in the NFL, sometimes you just truck someone, but this was a team at home with incredible defensive talent. I mean, that's the thing. In the state of Texas last weekend, two defenses that I thought were going to, you know, two of the top three probably collections of talent.
Yeah.
Browns and Cowboys got absolutely torched, and play calling, scheming, big part.
Do I need to say it? Matt LaFleur, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
That's very nice. I feel better.
Now, don't screw it up again, but I'm sorry.
For 1 week. I mean, I will say that if somehow the Packers and Lions get to the NFC Championship game, you know, I feel like we should almost do a live remote at some bar. So put that out into the ether.
That could be a dangerous time. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and the coaching search, all those things. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 of the game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.